Hello, Ruth.
Hi, how you doing?
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
Well, I'm not late today.
Yeah. A lot of Zooming going on between this and AUW.
Right, I saw you yesterday.
Yeah.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Ruth. How are you? Oh, let's see. This is
Hello.
Are you outside?
Yeah, I have to stay outside while cleaning people are coming.
We're having that tomorrow.
Oh, boy. Let's see. Where's Mike? I'll do this mic here. Plugs. What? Does that work? That should work. There, let's see if this works. I don't know if I'm even gonna be able to stay out here.
Yeah, we were out for a walk early this morning, but it must be really bad now.
I came back from a walk. I don't have a whole lot of. I only have 28% on this. Let's hope it. Oh boy, does it work on a phone? I may have to do it on my phone.
Yeah, you can. Natalie did it, I think, on her phone.
I don't know how to make my phone stand up, though, but let's see. All right.
Getting my iPad to stand.
Yeah. The iPad I have, but let's see. Let me try it on here. All right, I'll come back. I'm going to come in again, and then I'll leave this one. Okay. Let's see, there we go. All right, there. Okay.
You're echoing.
Yeah, I'm going to get off this one. All right, come on, leave it. All right, there we go. That should work. Okay.
So that's on your iPhone?
Yeah. I only have 28. I don't think the iPad will last an hour at 28%. Let's see. We'll stand up against this pot.
Hi, Ellen. Oh.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Ellen.
You have a good birthday, Ellen?
Yeah. Oh, happy birthday, Ellen.
Happy birthday, Carol Flicker.
I can't believe the whole group of you have your birthdays one day after the next.
We do. We always go out to lunch together.
Oh, that's so nice. Well,
not this year.
No.
You could have a virtual, you know, a Zoom lunch.
Not the same.
No.
All right. Let's see.
We actually did celebrate. We went out to dinner last night to Clarity in Vienna.
Oh.
And they're serving, they have all these tents set up in their parking lot. So they're all kind of spread out in the parking lot. And it was, the waiters have on masks and these shields. They look like they're miners or something. And it was a fancy dinner.
Oh, how nice.
So anyway, we had driven by there and seen the setup that they had.
We'll give it a try.
Do you recommend them, Clarities?
It's very expensive. I totally recommend it. It's great, but it's not like everyday dinner. It's a nice dinner.
It's a special meal.
Yeah, but this was like a 6-course meal. And the courses were, you know, it wasn't like you're eating like a pig. They're little tasty kind of courses. But it was very good. And I felt safe.
Good. We walked this morning and we noticed that Calypso at Lake Ann, they've done a really beautiful job. They must have spent a fortune on these beautiful blue pots and
lemonade the perlode
that separate all the tables. It's really pretty.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it looked like Cafe Montmartre was getting ready to open as well.
Yeah.
And I think Clyde's is serving outdoors.
Hi, Alan.
They all are. I'm on a call.
I'm looking day older.
One of my weekly.
Look at Carol Flicker. It's her birthday, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Your birthday as well? I didn't know that. Happy birthday.
Carol's was Tuesday.
Jesus, with June birthdays.
And Roberta's is today.
Oh my gosh. And Carol Isaacs is the day after, I think.
Saturday. Right. Hers is Saturday. And I don't know if anybody remembers Sandy Esterson, but hers was the same day as mine.
Right.
We had a big group that was all clustered together.
I have two golf friends that are both June 1st. There is something about
the month. Count backward.
Yeah.
How is everybody?
Good.
Good.
Good. Okay. So everybody can get, you can get settled where you are, comfortable where you are, adjust what you need. A good break in the middle of a day.
Hi, Shirley.
Hello, Shirley.
Hi, Shirley.
Find a little bit of space.
Trying to find shade.
Need an umbrella, Joanne.
I have an umbrella. Yeah. I gotta figure out where the sun is. I may have to change. I have it up against a plant pot. So let's see. The sun's going. Oh, I'm just gonna move around the table and figure it out. No, that's not working.
Yeah, it's toasty out here.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute you all so you can each settle into your own space. It's good to be connected, but for a moment, I'm going to let you all be where you are. You can lower your gaze. Okay. Okay. You can lower your gaze. You can close your eyes. We'll come back to each other in a moment. But just to let yourself settle into this moment, into this day, into what is for you right now. Breathe, notice your restrictions, notice your places of ease, don't judge them. Just sort of be present to what is true in your body and in your heart, right, in this moment. So I'll unmute us in a few minutes. I'll say a few words and we can check in together, besides checking on restaurants, which is a good thing to check in on too. I was thinking today about us being here together in this moment, and what some of us or all of us sort of might be carrying, and how a mindfulness practice can be present to that and support us in what we're carrying and help us grow from this moment. So I'm thinking about a lot of the pain and sorrow and righteous anger that may be permeating our lives or in different ways in different moments. This week particularly is asking a great deal of us. It's asking us to really listen to the voices of people who are systematically oppressed. It's asking us to really hear what they are saying. It's calling us to look deeply at ourselves and the views and biases that we hold unknowingly. And it's calling us to act. So how can we use the tools of mindfulness and the spiritual framework of Judaism to help equip us for this time? For me this week, like the overlap of them is so strong, because we can call upon all kinds of Jewish values that we can act with compassion, with wisdom, with patience, with discernment to wrestle with all of the challenges to the best of our ability, so that we can find not a place of ease, but a place of balance, so that we can then engage and act mindfully, act justly in the face of difficult and challenging times. And to be able to do this, I think we need to acknowledge our interconnectedness as human beings. We are all of one divine source, every human soul, every broken human soul, but every human soul nonetheless. As Emma Lazarus and Martin Luther King quotes her, right, until all are free, none are free. So how can we use mindfulness through the lens of Jewish values to guide us, to support us? I'm thinking about a lot of different Jewish values. And my list is not exhaustive, but they're the ones sort of that arose first. So yesterday in Musar, we spent time with the Midah of Chesed, of what is poorly translated as loving kindness, but it's the deep loving kindness of creation, the way that divine love connects every human being and merits that divine love. Regardless, it's not about what we've earned in life, but that human souls are of divine source. The Midah of Rachamim, which we translate as compassion, in Musar, in Judaism, we understand that compassion is the actions that are motivated for us to take from as a response to someone's suffering or to help a broken situation. I'm thinking about the Midah of silence, not an empty silence, but a full silence, to be really present to the world around us, so we can really hear, we can really listen to what is needed. I'm thinking about courage, what we call omitz lev, which literally translates as heart strength, to draw upon the deep wells within each of us to face what is difficult, so that we can do what is right and just, even as we may experience challenging or uneasy emotions. And to recognize when our emotions arise, that we can use practice, we can use spaciousness to witness our emotions so that we can act clearly and not just be emotional about our emotions. More midot, savlanut, which is, we translate as patience, but really is the capacity to bear the present appropriately till the time is right to act. So it's not endless waiting, but measuring a situation, knowing what we have to carry and then what we're supposed to do. Humility to take up the right amount of space in a given moment or a given situation. And energy, right? The quality of what's called zirizut, which is like, how do we act? How do we fulfill something? The almost like the intention behind what we do. Enthusiasm, willingness, dedication, commitment. So there are like all these different midot that are arising for me. I'll repeat what I said, just so you can sort of sit with them, because I actually want you to sit with them for a minute. So chesed, deep loving kindness, rachamim, compassion, silence, ometz lev, courage, savlanut, the capacity to bear until the action is right, humility, which is anava, and zirizut, this energy to sustain all of that. So before we sit for a moment, I'm going to unmute you all. I think I unmuted you all. So I'm just wondering, like, before we sit, do you have any, are there questions that are arising, or is there just, like, we're sharing here, so I know I talk a lot. But also the, you know, as we head into sitting for a moment, I'm just curious if there's anything anybody wants to ask or say.
So I love what you said about silence, that it allows us to hear what other people are saying and to take in the outside environment and even hear our own selves. And what I was thinking, though, when you were talking about that is we've seen a lot of quotes about silence being complicity. Know that when people don't speak up against an injustice, they're equally guilty or complicit in that injustice. So I'm just want to understand a little bit about how those two aspects of silence make sense. Maybe there's both. And anyway, what do you think?
Oh, that's great. So, you know, all of these Jewish character values and others and the idea of Musar practice, which takes like the character values, it uses mindfulness to be present and aware to what we are working on in ourselves. All of the traits that we work on in ourselves and aspire to are all, they're kind of all situational.
Okay.
I like to teach that it's not about becoming more patient or becoming more silent or becoming more humble, because in each moment, what we have to work on in ourselves is recognizing sort of where are we most out of balance and where do we have to find where might we have to find a better balance of any of those traits in any given situation. So kind of like Ecclesiastes teaches, right? There is a time to be silent and a time to speak. So where do we need to use the midah? Where do we need to develop the character trait to listen, to make space, to hear? And where should there be a lot of silence and where should there be a little silence? Yeah. That's what I would say about any of these traits.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so it's not all one thing all the time, but never. Adjusting. Yeah, thanks. That's good.
So a little bit to sit with. So I would just, let's sit again. This time holding sort of what trait perhaps of these, let's just stick with these. There's probably too many, right? I had seven. Seven's a nice Jewish number. Chesed, so deep loving kindness, compassion, silence, courage, bearing, savlanut, bearing, humility, and energy. So without getting graspingly introspective, see what arises for you as we sit, as maybe where you find strength in those traits and where you might notice either discomfort or a sense of maybe out of balance, just a noticing in yourself what comes up as you think about these traits and maybe something that what are the things that we're going to need to rely on and cultivate in the right balance, Susan, right? Yeah. To be able to act. Because any of our practice is about refining ourselves in different ways, using Jewish ideals, using values that allow us to then act in the world, live in the world. So I'm going to mute again. And so just like sit with that and notice like if there's body shifts that happen, like is there tension in certain places as you're sitting with this, and you know, and then thoughts may arise and sort of digress into things you have to do. And again, as with our practice, just allow, like recognize that whatever is arising to then try and come back to just be with these values, with these experiences, without judging where they go. wondering if there's anything anybody wants to share that came up or experienced or ask about.
I thought that was too many things to think about. I had to pick one.
Oop, Carol, I can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now? I thought it was a lot to think about, so I started thinking about compassion, but somehow that brought to mind complacency and silence and just in what's going on in the country. You know, I feel like I'm a compassionate person, but am I guilty being complacent because I'm silent? And yet I don't feel like at my age I'm going to go do a protest march, you know. I don't know. It was an interesting group of words to think on.
I knew it could be complicated, but I didn't want to give just one because I think everybody's in different places. So not surprising that different ones may have just risen up for each of you.
Right.
Okay.
These situations have a tendency to put people on the defensive. At least my response and my reaction to them has always been that when they occur, and they occur with regular frequency, they just do, and they have most of our lives. And rightfully so, I think they should put us on the defensive. They should make us introspective. They should make us think about why they occurred. But through my life, I've not had this sense of guilt. It's not to say that I've not changed, and I have. I certainly have changed in the last year or so since being associated or being a member of MBHC and watching you, Cantor, and the rabbis work us through these various social democracy programs and this thought process and so forth. I did the homework, or at least I think I, you know, I read the books, did the thinking, did the introspection in different ways that I've ever done before. I've just been trying to watch myself react to others around me as they react to what's going on and how I've been able to respond. And I've responded in different ways. And I take comfort in that. But no guilt. I agonize for the protesters and for what they're protesting. And also know that it's going to take a very long time for us to fix what's wrong with this country. But I don't think I'm being silent, because I think if I fall into that trap. I'm not trying to judge. I'm just simply saying, for me, it repudiates everything I've stood for my entire life. And I've not been silent in my life. I've been active. I wish I had known then what I know now. I think I would have been active in different ways. So I just have to think about different things that I can do now that will make perhaps more of an impact or more of a difference. And that's what I'm looking to do. And that's how I step away from this incessant trap that we, I think, can fall into of, here we go again. I didn't do enough, or I'm not doing enough. I don't know if that's right or wrong. It's just the way I am right now.
I think back to 1968, when I was in Baltimore in the riots. And I was in eighth grade, and how my mom made my dad go around the whole Baltimore Beltway, because we lived in the Northwest side where most of the Jewish people lived, and his work was on the Northeast side. But I think back to when I was working and the people that I treated, and I have no guilt how I treated people. I treated them for what they were and how they were, whether they were Black, Brown, or Asian, or whatever they were. And I, you know, sometimes in conversation you hear people say, oh, she, you know, she's a nice person, and I have no guilt to how I conducted my life and how I treated people. But I do see that these folks are, I guess what got me the other day, there was an older grandmotherly Black woman on the news, and she said, you've wrecked my only place to shop for food. And that's the part I can't understand, is how they're wrecking the buildings that they have. We're still in this COVID lockdown, and some things we're trying to open and to purposely wreck. I don't attribute it to the normal protesters. I assume there's other people who are trying to stir up more violence than is necessary to make the point. To make the point is peaceful protest.
The reason I bring I mean, for me, I'm sitting with all of these ways to look at what's happening right now. These different character traits, and the idea of using mindfulness to reflect on and to like discern where we are, without judging ourselves, whatever we've done. But I do think that as a society, what we're seeing now, you know, the harm and sufferings of racism, to begin to really unravel all of that, the historical trauma, the microaggressions, and from where at least all of us on this in this room together sit right now, the white privilege that is built into our society right now, that can be a barrier to conversation, that the work that I'm sharing with you is the level of self-awareness to sit without judgment with what might be uncomfortable, to be present and aware, to discern with curiosity and kindness. Like, we may not be perpetrators of things, but we are part of a problem right now that we all carry in different ways, right? Different things came up for each of you, different qualities that you were, that, you know, sort of rose to your attentiveness in the moment. And so how can we use sort of who we are and as a community and the values and the practices that we're cultivating to get inside a challenging moment that perhaps isn't of our personal doing, but that we are a part of nonetheless, just by virtue of not in fact exactly by virtue of nothing we have done, but by virtue of who we are, right, that society has created. And that's a challenge. How do we think about, how do we experience, and how can we then act mindfully to help facilitate crucial conversations, to help, you know, marry our intentions to actions in a way that that can bring healing, right? That's the trait of compassion, is about relieving suffering, right? It's different from chesed, from loving kindness, which every soul Jewish tradition merits regardless as just being part of a divine soul. But compassion is about relieving suffering. So where that brought me to for us to think about for today with our practice and sitting is words of Torah in this week's Torah portion. There's a beautiful three-line blessing that we find in this week's Torah portion. And it's taught that these three lines of blessing are about both asking for material blessing, physical blessing, and spiritual blessing. The lines in English are, may God bless and keep you. May God's face shine, turn to you, shine upon you, and give you grace. And may God's presence turn again, may God's presence lift to you and grant you peace, bring you wholeness, shalom. So in ancient times, blessing, this was the obligation of the priest to say in ancient times, and blessing the people was like one of the chief responsibilities of the priest. But the Torah also makes it clear that while the priest offers the blessing, the priest is the conduit. The blessing comes from God. And it's important that the people feel the blessing coming from God, that it's not, that the priest is a channel or a conduit. So in, as the Talmud looks at, like, so, you know, how does this come to be the priest's job to bless? The Talmud says that the priests actually have to prepare to say this blessing. That the Talmudic blessing says, blessed are you, sovereign of the universe, who sanctifies us with the holiness of Aaron, right, the first high priest, and commands us to bless the people with love. With love. So the rabbis in the Talmud imply that love and harmony has to exist between the priests and the community for the potential of the blessing to be realized. And without such love, there's an emptiness between, among the people, between the people and their representative. Like, there is incapability of receiving blessing without a place of deep and abiding love, of this chesed, right, of this divine love that every human being merits by virtue of their existence as a human soul. So blessing is, I think then, is about God's presence. So part of what we can, part of the ground we need to lay, part of our own mindful practice of embodying Jewish values is, how do we actually lay, how do we make the ground ready, right? How do we create an environment of loving kindness, of God's presence? There's a lovely little gematria. Gematria is the weird connection between letters and numbers, and that every Hebrew letter has a numerical value. And then you can play with that to your heart's content. But the first line of the blessing, the letters total, let me think. I have to remember the gematria now that I mentioned it. The letters should, no, they don't total up to 15. I think the words total up to, I'm gonna have to go back and play with it now. I wrote it down, but I forgot. I'll come back to it and I'll tell you. Forget it. I'll come back to it. The idea, though, still, that, like, this place of love is where God's presence and God's blessing comes to us. The text even itself, though, I will tell you, in the Torah, the text is set differently. So it's not just columns of text, but it's like set with spaces all around it. It's spacious, right? That sense of spaciousness, that sense of presence. The Kotzko Rebbe says, where is God? I love it. Like, in the spaces, he says, God is wherever we let God in, wherever we make room for God in our lives. So this power of blessing that comes to us, that the priests have to bless in love, that the priests have to be this open channel of love. And the reality is that we are a kingdom of priests, right? That's what Exodus teaches. So in a sense, we are all the potential conduits for love, and for love and for blessing. And there's no magic to it. It's human aspiration. That's what blessings are. Our prayers are, and our blessings are aspirational, our deepest yearnings. And so if we can create not a culture of blessing, but if we can just create the ground of loving kindness to then build upon, loving kindness and justice are very interconnected. One of my teachers, Rabbi Sheila Weinberg, teaches that that in circumstances of injustice, whether we find ourselves in the role of victim or perpetrator or bystander, of course, bring great shame and confusion for everybody. And the only way that the trauma is healed is through love. That love heals our wounds, overcomes suffering, and opens a path to justice. And that is the intended effect of this Birkat Kohanim, what we call the priestly blessing, these three lines of blessing. The Torah says, why do the priests have to say these words? So that that my name is linked with the people of Israel, and I will bless them. So that in, so God's presence can be felt, can be raised up in our lives in every moment. And that we have the responsibility of being the conduit for divine love, so that way other things can grow in that soil. I think that, well, that's, it's the first step of action. It's recognizing that that's the first responsibility that we have. I'm a little bit what Carol said, like, I'm a compassionate person, but am I complicit? And I can't answer that. Like, none of us can answer that, right? But that's the question to ask. So how can we at least start with the place of mindfully recognizing that we all are conduits. We all have the potential to be conduits of God's presence and God's blessing. There's a famous line of teaching, a Professor Cornel West, you may have heard of it, right? He writes that justice is what love looks like in public. Justice is what love looks like in public, right? Pursuing justice is rooted in chesed. It's rooted in this divine loving kindness. It's rooted in a practice of compassion, of trying, of relieving suffering that we see. And so it's not that mindfulness and embodying our Jewish values is enough, but they're the grounding. They can be the source of inspiration for action, right? We're working to cultivate our inner tools to access wisdom and resilience in the midst of chaos, to fine-tune the way we show up in our daily lives, in the challenges of now, in the relationships that we cultivate. Not that we can go sit on a mountaintop, so that we can engage in the world, so that we can shift the sands beneath us. So how can we allow how can we plant what we want, mindfully plant what we want in the soil of our lives, so that way we can grow ourselves, and we can grow and act to bring about the changes that we want to see, the justice that we know we want to be there, to recognize where consciously and as bystanders, we get in the way. And I love the idea of it, like the idea of being bystanders. Because bystanders are inadvertent, but they still can contribute to a challenge in front of us. But we can still figure out, discern how to shift that. How do we use this work, this practice? So before we sit again, I want to open it up to sort of your thoughts, comments, questions.
I was thinking when we were sitting the last time, as a couple of you said, you know, there was so much to think about. But what I ended up, my mind went to is the idea of patience, compassion, patience, and energy. How do we have compassion? And then we say, well, you know, we need to have patience, forbearance to the right time. And then how do we ensure that we actually act at the right time? You know, that patience doesn't become so valued that we actually miss our chance to contribute. I mean, it's not a question really for an answer, but it's just like, that's how I was thinking, that it's important to not let patience go on so long that we miss our chance.
And that's exactly what the midah of patience is, right? It comes from the Hebrew word actually to bear a burden, lisbol, sobel. And so knowing in the moment, like what's the capacity of what we need to bear until the time is right for action. It's not just the capacity to bear.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we as a tradition have, we have a tradition of learning a lot and, you know, studying and stuff. And then you have to get, we have to get to a point where it's time to act. Yeah. So well, it's good to think about those things together.
For myself, I feel like I don't do enough listening most of the time, that constantly in motion, constantly talking. I don't do enough listening. So maybe doing more listening right now to make me aware of privilege that has been there that I don't recognize as such, and see what is needed or what the others need would be a good thing for me anyway.
Joanne?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was on my phone. That's a little off. I was thinking about what you were saying, Susan, about justice is love in public, because that's pretty much what I did for my whole career, is working with inner city families, trying to get them justice when a system was so against them. And I've always been, and I know it was part of me, my Jewishness was got me into doing my work, of what I was taught. But it's also at the same time, as much as I was able to, as a lawyer, assist people, because of the difference in life experiences, I always felt a bit on the outside, that I could not relate to what these individuals were experiencing in life because of my privilege. And so I always did have that sense and sensitivity to it.
So I can tell you the gematria now, because it came back into my head, about how God's presence is in this blessing. And it's about the number of letters. I was like, oh, of course. So in the first line of the blessing, there's 15 letters. You have to do math, though. This is where gematria always gets me. But the first line of the blessing has 15 letters. The second line of the blessing has 20 letters. And the third line of the blessing has 25 letters. So who does math well?
60.
And if you take God's name as it's written out in Torah, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, you're going to get, actually, you're only going to get 26, right? 30? No. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, 11. I can't do math. 15 and 11 is 26.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And then if you add in the word echad, and then you have to put, so this is why gematria gets me crazy, but I love it, because it's like, it's how do we look for, like, beneath the letters, and you'll also get to the number 60. And so, like, in this blessing, we have God's name and God's presence built into saying these words. It's just another way to look at, like, maybe some hidden layer. So how can we sit with what each of us bring, what we have to, where we are ourselves, to discern ourselves with our capacity to then act? With what that is, without you know, if we bring, I think if we, there's a difference between responsibility and guilt and shame. So how can we, how can we take in the qualities that we need, embody and be mindful of the qualities that we need, of the things that arise in our hearts, and be responsible to them without, without guilt? Because if we are mirrors, our souls are mirrors to the world. So if we carry guilt and shame and blame, we're going to, inside, we're going to carry that outside, and that's not going to heal anything. So how can we sit with a sense of attentiveness and responsibility are, and how we can, what we can carry so that we can be that justice, that love and justice, right? The love in public. So with that, perhaps just sit with that idea for a moment, sort of let all of this sit with you, and it may be bubbling and it may be confusing, and that's okay. Like the, so part of the mindfulness practice is to sort of recognize that all of these things are bubbling in us, because sometimes sitting with them and sort of letting them be and witnessing them is when discernment is, when more clarity of just what we are experiencing and then what we can do is, that that's when it arises. And it may not arise in this moment, but it may come, it comes, we have to give it the space to be there. And so practicing together like this gives us the opportunity to create that space. Any last thoughts or ideas or questions before we finish together?
Sometimes I think when we look at the problems that we're facing today, they seem so big. And then it's really hard for me, anyway, to imagine how I could make a contribution. And on Tuesday night, we were studying with Rabbi Holzman, and he talked about, first of all, the faith community working together is a contribution. We might not see a radical change you could point to, but that's a contribution. And then he talked about how the faith communities working together can have an impact on local leadership and communities. And then that translates up to the state. And that really helped me feel like there's a chance that I could make a contribution, because I don't feel like I can make a contribution on a national level. And, you know, especially where we are here, the national level is so prevalent. So I'm hitching my star to, or my wagon to the star of local and state as a way of feeling like I can actually, you know, make a difference.
I truly believe that the whole universe is connected, and any moment that we can make a shift, it forces everything else to shift. And it might seem incremental or microscopic, but it still happens. And so each moment that we can, cultivate that, the capacity for really living our values, that we can begin with drawing down blessing of, you know, of chesed, of loving kindness for every human being, without judgment, can lay the groundwork for that connectedness, for true justice, for liberation. And then when we can do that, we can take a next step. And we can take that each day. And part of this work and this practice is to be aware, right? It's that awareness of where we exist in this, of what's going on for us, of trying to be present to that without judgment, because that then allows us wisdom and guidance to act. So not just to sit quietly back and be wise, but to then move us to know what's true. Does this continue to be helpful for everyone?
Yes. Okay. I think I benefit every week. Thank you.
Just making sure. Everybody's doing all right otherwise? Or otherwise, right? It's like, how'd you like the play, Mrs. Lincoln? Everybody's holding up?
Yes, sir.
Moments of joy in every day. That's the goal.
And, you know, please let us know if there's something you need, if there's something you know somebody else needs, like, you know, just stay connected. I can't always stay connected to everybody. So I'll miss things if we all don't help each other, let each other know stuff. So.
Answer the video that you and the synagogue provided about 3 days ago. Very well done.
Thank you.
Broke my heart.
Well, yeah. Those are not easy to do, having had something to do with the other side of those at times. And Yeah, 12 minutes. Not a lot of time to say what you probably wanted to say, but it was very well done. So thank you for that. And for the policy decisions that went behind it.
We'll hold sadness for what we miss, and then we're going to create something unknown and amazing, I hope.
Right. Nothing else we can do.
That's right. That's right. All right, everyone. Well, get yourselves some sunshine today. Some of you already are. Good, fresh, you know. Take advantage of the beauty of the world. Let us.
Yeah, it is toasty out there. I was out there and kind of.
Well, we can't complain about the warmth.
Sunblock for everybody.
Yep.
I walked early to get in before the heat. So.
Yeah, we did too.
Good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone. Everybody.
Good to see everyone.
See you soon.
Take care. Have a good week.
You too. Bye.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Raise me up.
You okay, Phyllis? How are you holding up? Wait, I can't hear you.
No. Is that it? Okay.
Yep.
No, I'm doing okay. Speak to people every day, see the flickers almost every day. It's good.
Okay. Is there stuff is there stuff that you need now? I mean, you know, time passes.
No. I'm pretty good.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to check in.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. See you soon.
Right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.